The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Monday edition of Straight Talk Money. Peggy Tuck along with Chase Robertson. And by the way, you too can join us. If you've got a question or a comment, join in at 844-305-7800. Or you can always go to straighttalkmoney.com and send your question, and I'll do my best to get it out over the air for you. But I'm always really excited when we have this guest, especially because he will come in studio with us as well. But every quarter we do a report, and so we're out now with the National Association for Business Economics. We've had some fantastic people on the show, and this really kind of gives us a pulse of where the economy is looking from a business standpoint. So joining us today, we have the regional economist and vice president of research for the Greater Houston Partnership. He oversees the research department, which provides that information, data analysis, economic forecasting. He's also a member of the Texas Economic and Demographic Association, National Association for the Business Economics, who he's representing today. Commercial Real Estate Research Forum, and he's also the president of the Houston Economics Club. So welcome today, Patrick Jankowski. Good morning.
Thank you very much, Peggy. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. Okay, so when I read through the report, considering the last report, it's pretty much seemed not a lot changed.
When I was going through the results, I was amazed at how many of the categories were unchanged. We asked the panelists, have things improved? Are they rising? Mm-hmm. Are they unchanged? Are they falling? And it seems like almost in every category, it's somewhere in the 50s or the 60s that pretty much things are unchanged. Things are unchanged. If I had to summarize, if I had to categorize the entire report, you know, we ask a couple dozen questions, I would say it's pretty much steady as it goes. Things, based on the report, still favorable for the economy. Profits improve somewhat. Expectations are that sales will start to increase a little bit. The pressure on material and wage costs seem to have stabilized. And the expectations for GDP growth still remain positive over the next four quarters. It's really interesting. If you look at that GDP question, 65% or about two-thirds of all the respondents are still expecting GDP growth between 2 and 3%. Mm-hmm. Now, ideally, we'd like for it to be above 3% because that's really heady growth. But 2% is not bad, and 2% may be the new norm for the economy.
Now, sales, of course, we were talking in the last break about retail. Of course, this doesn't necessarily just apply to retail. But in sales, where do we stand there? Do you see, are the economists seeing a slowdown in sales?
Well, you have to look at the detail in the survey. The respondents are broken into four different categories. There's goods producing, which is your manufacturing, mm-hmm. construction, mining, transportation, utilities, finance, insurance, and real estate, and services. If you look at the goods producing sector,
right.
and the finance sector, sales are actually quite strong in those sectors. They both reported rising sales. They weaken somewhat, though, when you look at transportation, utilities, and services. And so what we're seeing is the service sector kind of weighing down the goods producing sector in the finance sector. Overall, though, sales are still strong. We'd like to see them stronger. They're not as strong as they were in the first quarter, but they're actually stronger than they were in the fourth quarter. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that because I go back once again to that expectation of GDP growth between 2 and 3%.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter whether you live in Houston, doesn't matter whether you live in Denver, doesn't matter whether you live in Kerrville or New Haven. The fact that the U.S. economy is still growing is good news for you wherever you live.
So when you say financial sales, is that like a mortgage origination? What does the granularity look like that?
Well, the sector is called FIRE, finance, insurance, and real estate. Uh-huh. That could be J.P. Morgan Chase. It could be AIG. It could be CBRE. It's just that okay. broad sector.
Gotcha. Okay. So that sector is doing extremely well. Okay.
Yeah, and the goods producing sector. It's actually kind of nice to see the goods producing sector doing so well because in previous surveys they've been a laggard. And they've been maybe one of the last to actually benefit from this long expansion that we've had, this mm-hmm. long recovery.
So are you all seeing manufacturing then increasing? So that seems to be one on the positive side.
Yeah, if I can bring something in from outside of the survey, if you look
sure.
at the latest industrial production index,
right?
We saw industrial production go up 0.5% in March. I mean, industrial production is going to include utilities, it's going to include mining, and it's going to include manufacturing. And for those who live in Denver or Texas, the fact that mining is going up mm-hmm. is good news. The fact that manufacturing is going up is good news for both economies.
So you would say that with mining, that we're seeing an uplift in new home building, which is pulling that, or on the industrial side, we're seeing oil prices come up where there's, you know, the capital investment in the infrastructure. Is that a way to dumb it down?
One thing, yes, oil and gas is a subsector of mining, mm-hmm. and we've seen the rig count across the U.S. increase. It's increased strongest in the Permian Basin. This time last year, we were approaching the bottom of the rig count. The rig count was when we hit bottom, it was 404 rigs. And when the data came in this last Friday and we got the rig count was at 857. So
wow.
we've actually seen the rig count more than double off its bottom. Now, it's still substantially below where it was in September of 2014 when it was at 1931. But that shows that's investment. That's investment. That's mining activity. It's also investment in the capital that you need to go out and look for the oil and gas or minerals or whatever you're looking for in the mining sector.
Gotcha.
When it comes to companies, what about where do they stand as far as employment and wages?
Well, if you look at the survey, 39% of the respondents said that they saw wages rising in the first quarter. And 60% said wages were unchanged. So you're looking at basically 99% say that wages are either rising or unchanged. That's a good sign. We need to see some wage growth, though. The wage growth will support additional growth in the economy, additional consumption expenditures. If you look at expectations for wages are that they will rise. 44% of the respondents said they expected to see wages rise in the second quarter. That's actually a little bit down from the January survey, but we're still seeing expectations for rising wages. As far as employment, 24% of the respondents said that that employment rose at their firm in the first quarter, and 27% expected to see it continue to rise in the second quarter. Those that reported no change, about two-thirds of them reported mm-hmm. no change mm-hmm. in employment. And so if you're looking at no change or rising employment, that's a good sign. The numbers that are reporting declining employment are actually quite low. I mean, to bring something in from outside the survey, the initial jobless claims in the last 4 weeks was only 243,000. That's actually a good sign. Initial claims for unemployment insurance have been declining. The five-year average is a little over 300,000. So when you hit 243, it shows the initial claims for unemployment are at a good level.
So to dumb this down a little bit. So you're saying more people are being hired and they're getting paid more for those jobs.
Maybe marginally more. We're not seeing dramatic increase,
more.
But we are seeing some increases. If you want to look at over the last 12 months, the U.S. has added 2.2 million jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not shabby at all. Now, the last month. The month for March was a fairly weak month, but if 1 month doesn't make a trend.
And Patrick, mm-hmm. do you think there's some of that's coming from Trump, or do you think that's just on pace with earnings looking to grow 4.8% this year, and companies are just doing well and the economy is moving along?
It's a combination of things. For one thing, we may have finally worked out all the problems that we had in the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
There is expected business confidence with Trump coming into office. There's the fact that the U.S. economy continues to outperform the rest of the world. I mean, there
sure.
are a
mm-hmm.
number of factors that come in. I can't put my finger on any one of them.
Fair enough. All right, folks, stick with us. Patrick Jankowski, Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, the Monday edition of Straight Talk Money. We'll be right back.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. We're talking about what's going on in the U.S. economy, and we've got the latest NABE survey, and we've got Patrick Jankowski joining us in the studio to talk about it. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, welcome back, Patrick. You know, Peggy and I always joke that the best analysis is always done during the break. sometimes we urge people just to stop speaking. But, you know, Patrick, you brought up a great point about interest rates and trying to tie all of our markets in. You know, we have listeners that listen in New York and San Francisco. You know, can you pontificate on, you know, your first kind of special question?
The question was asked, I'll just state the question. The Fed has raised interest rates twice in the past 4 months, suggesting that the pace of the rate increase may be faster this year than the past 2 years. For your business, what is the potential impact for tighter monetary policy? That was a question that was posed to the panelists. Mm-hmm. 36% said it'll have no impact, Fed's raising interest rates. And if you look at that, 54% said that the increase will be positive.
Out of the fire sector, the insurance and...
No, that's out of all respondents. If you look at
all respondents, okay.
Look at that response. Now, there were some were able to answer more than one way. So if you had all the percentages up, they're going to exceed 100. But the vast majority of the respondents see the rising interest rates as either having no impact or having a positive impact. Rising interest rates not being seen as a negative for the economy. It's not weighing down growth.
I mean, do you think that's a function of, you know, obviously if you're in the fire sector, the finance, insurance, you know, positive interest rates are good from an interest income perspective, from a delivery of good returns. But from the goods producing sector or a sector that has a lot of heavy working capital and a lot of capital costs, you would see rising interest rates to be negative because it's eating your bottom line. Is that kind of how you'd look at that?
Well, exactly. If you, once again, breaking it down by sector, if you look at the majority of those in the goods producing sector, saw interest rates as being a negative, while the majority of those in the finance, insurance, and real estate sector saw interest rates as being a positive.
Gotcha.
So it really depends upon where you sit.
Sure.
But if you look at for the overall economy, because the economy is composed of all different sectors, it doesn't seem to be a negative for the economy.
No, I would agree. I just wanted to make sure I was reading this report correctly. But no, I would agree. I mean, we think, you know, we're very focused on REITs here. We have, you know, alternatives are a big part of how we invest, not only because we like products that aren't as correlated to the market. So many of our clients and families that we serve here at Roberts Wealth Management, you know, they're looking for that constant income. But, you know, there's no better hedge against inflation in a rising interest rate market than real estate. And I can see where people in that sector are going to be really excited about the changes.
One of the other special questions that you asked about had to do with the dollar. You know, there's been so much talk about the dollar, especially, I guess Trump came out and he was talking about the strong dollar. And I saw a funny little quote. Greenspan said that's when he turned his hearing aids off. And so how did the survey view what is going on? Are they looking at preferably a stronger dollar or want to see it pulling back?
Well, 51% of the respondents said that it had no impact on their business, the stronger dollar.
Okay.
Only 20% said that the stronger dollar was a negative. But it's also interesting to say that 24% or a fourth of them said they didn't know the impact. So,
I would agree with that because, you know, when I was a senior officer for the Iberia Bank Corporation, you know, focused on private equity, transportation, oil field services, you know, unless you had a real strong hedge book, you just weren't dialing into the impact of currency. I mean, you were looking for a contracted cash flow, but I rarely saw the average middle market company, you know, market caps between $500 million and $2.5 billion. That's small cap. Next grade up. You know, really diving into that. So I find that part of your report very accurate.
You know, it's interesting, but like we talked about earlier, the goods producing sector stands out in all this because the goods producing sector did see. A large percentage of the respondents did say that was a negative. And if you think about it, if you're trying to sell your goods overseas, as the price of the dollar becomes more expensive vis-a-vis other currencies, it makes your ability to sell overseas. But when you look at transportation, you look at finance, you look at broad services, very few of those respondents saw the rising dollar as being a negative. So once again, it depends upon where you are.
That's a good point.
We saw that wages seemed, you know, positive or at least unchanged as well as employment. But what about these companies and their profits? Because if they're making money and they're not expanding and spending, is that helping the economy? So if they're not doing the capital expenditures?
Well, the panelists were a little bit less upbeat about capital spending at their firms. The percent that reported capital spending were rising, it actually has declined from previous surveys. Two-thirds of them pretty much said that there's no change in the capital expenditures. If you're looking at expectations over the next 3 months, looks like expectations for capital spending slipped just a little bit as well. If there's one area for concern in the survey, this would be where I would see it, is the fact that expectations for capital spending over the next 3 months are weaker than previous surveys.
Well, because then you wouldn't see, I mean, that has a big impact on the economy, doesn't it?
Oh, of course, of course.
I mean, do you think that view from your panelists, where they're agreeing that Trump is struggling getting policy through the door, and that his outlandish statements around infrastructure spending, you know, people just don't believe it. They don't know how it's going to be financed. Do you think your panelists look to that view, or is it?
Well, there's no question in here where it acts specifically about President Trump and
sure
policies. But if we can go to another one of these special questions,
sure,
and that is whether the firms, the respondents, their firms in the survey, have changed any hiring and investment decisions as a result of the election. 81% of the respondents said they've made no changes to hiring and investment as a result of the outcome of the election. So
that's interesting. You know, you would think that your FIRE subsector, the finance and insurance and real estate, would have made changes just behind the idea that, you know, Dodd-Frank is going to be repealed, or you know, the tax cuts that he's promised are going to come into play. But, you know, I think personally that people are not as optimistic that Trump is going to be able to get, you know, get the touchdowns that he's looking for.
Well, that may show up in future surveys.
Okay.
Think about this. We're only 100 days. One quarter.
Saturday. This coming Saturday will be 100 days.
Yeah, this survey reflects the first quarter, reflects the first 100 days. Mm-hmm. When the next survey comes out, although we don't ask the specific question, it might somehow show up in the data. If we start to see some dramatic shifts, there might be some things we can infer from that.
Hmm. Okay.
How many economists were responding to this?
95. And they represent broad sector of industries, and they represent economists from all size firms, and they're spread out across the U.S. So it's a pretty good sample.
Yeah, you have a lot of really great people that are involved with NABE. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, I don't know about you, Chase, but I would like to find out then where do these companies and these economists see what's their biggest worry? What's their biggest threat that they see to their businesses, and what, you know, how they might be positioning themselves right now? You're listening to Straight Talk Money, bringing you the wisdom of Wall Street. Peggy Tuck, along with Chase Robertson, and also joining us, Patrick Jankowski from NABE. We'll be back after these very important messages. The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Welcome back, everybody, to the final segment of the Monday edition of Straight Talk Money. Peggy Tuck, Chase Robertson. Of course, we have Patrick Jankowski. He's a regional economist. He's also the vice president of research for the Greater Houston Partnership. More importantly, he is a member of NABE and the president of the Houston Economics Club, and he's here deciphering the latest NABE business conditions survey. Right before the break, Patrick, what I was wanting to know, because, you know, we saw certain trends throughout this whole entire report, is what do you see as perhaps maybe the biggest worry or the biggest threat that you saw emerge from this report to the business owners?
We consistently see every survey for quarter after quarter, their concern of a shortage of skilled labor.
Wow.
And that has been, it's one of those things that we ask the question so often, maybe we should stop asking it, because the answer is always the same. The biggest shortage is of skilled labor. And that's a real concern if you consider workforce growth and capital investment are two of the main components to economic growth. If we do not deal with our workforce issues with training, we are not going to ever get back up to 3% growth.
And what does that really mean? I mean, if I was a listener, what does skilled labor mean? I mean, does that mean actually skilled, like you were an apprentice of someone, or is that college graduate, white collar jobs? What does that look like?
It tends to be jobs that require more than a high school diploma.
Gotcha.
Usually requires 2 years of training or more.
Okay.
There are an awful lot of jobs that need an associate's degree, which is just 2 years beyond high school, that pay real well.
Sure.
I mean, the partnership has a program right now to work with that called Upskill Houston, where we're trying to identify that. We have a concern in the Houston area where we have $60 billion with chemical plants and refineries mm-hmm. expansion, second place over the last 3 to 4 years, and there's not enough workers to run some of those. We're concerned there won't be enough workers to run some of those. You can go to a community college in the Houston area, get a 2 years degree as an operator, someone who sits and operates the thing, mm-hmm. and make $70,000. So you can be 18, you can be 20, 21 years old and be mm-hmm. making $70,000 a year with that sort of training, because that's where the greatest need is. I mean, after a few years, you can easily be making over $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That's an example. Construction is another example. Highly skilled manufacturing labor is another example.
Highly skilled manufacturing. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, that's, you know, when I graduated from school, the window was 55 to 65, but petroleum engineers were getting $120,000 out of Texas A&M. And the finance guys, which I was in that group, were like, oh man, these guys are doubling us. If we didn't get to an A bank, we're getting doubled up. But, you know, you quickly see that as time goes on, you know, you get a raise and a bonus. They kind of stay in the same window. It's interesting to track that against the manufacturing and the control jobs, which are really popular down here.
Speaking of petroleum, I know you have a lot of experience with this as well, Patrick, but let's move on to the oil and gas sector, because that not only affects, of course, Texas and Houston, but also, you know, a large part of Colorado as well. And where do you see that going?
Oil has been trading consistently between $48 and $52, $53 a barrel for the last quarter. That may be the new normal. We're probably going to see oil trading in a $4 to $5 range, and maybe it'll ratchet up slowly over time. But at present, I don't see oil getting to $60 a barrel anytime soon. If you even go to the Energy Information Administration's mm-hmm. forecast, they're only forecasting an average of $52 a barrel this year and $55 a barrel next year. Part of it is that we're doing such a good job, again, of producing crude in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we averaged 8.9 million barrels a day last year. We'll probably average about 9 million barrels a day this year, probably get up to 9.9 million barrels a day in 2018. And so, ironically, yes, OPEC has cut back their 1.2 million barrels, and you've got a couple hundred thousand from other producers. And the U.S. has kind of eaten away at that. It hasn't eaten away at all of it. But the ability of the U.S. to continue to produce is something which is going to keep those prices in check. In my lifetime, I doubt I'll ever see oil at $100 a barrel again.
So do you think, you know, with that said, do you think OPEC is really a thing of the past, and that because the U.S. has become a swing producer, there would almost have to be a global pack to get oil back into the exciting ranges? Or
no, OPEC is still real important. They control the bulk of the world's resources. They control a third of the world's resources. We have issues to where consumption grows by an average of 1 to 1.2 million barrels a day mm-hmm. each year. In a few years, we're going to be back. We're going to be over 100 million barrels a day demand for crude. Even with all the alternative fuels that are coming online, the alternative energy sources, there's still going to be a demand for crude and for natural gas. OPEC is still important. They don't have they don't control the markets to the extent that they did, but they're mm-hmm. still a key supplier for the rest of the world.
Sure. And what do you think about Russia and their impact on supply demand? I mean, I always thought Russia would be a good addition to OPEC, but
Well, I don't think Putin wants to listen to anybody. I don't think he's demonstrated ability to cooperate or coordinate. So
it's one of Peggy's favorite topics, Putin.
Well, it's interesting because there was a headline this morning that said something about Russia had fallen off the list, I guess, of like our biggest enemy or something. They're not our biggest enemy anymore. We don't seem to be as concerned about what's going on in Russia, but we are more concerned about what's going on in North Korea. But, you know, Patrick, I can remember you being sitting in studio, much like we are right today, when Mike Robertson was sitting across the table from you, and you talked about your son, who is 32, and this is his second downturn that he's seen in the oil and gas market, and you're on your fifth. So does that tell us that it might be a cyclical market?
Oh, gosh, yes, it's a cyclical market. Sometimes the peaks and valleys are really extreme. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when oil, we talked about $100 oil. Let's go back 9 years when oil was at $150 a barrel.
Wow.
In July of 2014. Mm-hmm. And when natural gas was selling for $7, $8, $9 an MCF. Yes, it's very cyclical. Thing is, those who have been in the industry for a long time recognize the cyclical nature of it. It's those who have only been in the industry a year or two who get frightened with this happening. And frankly, if you've been in the industry a year or two, you're probably not in the industry anymore. When the industry went through its layoffs, the first people to let go were those who were recently hired who had no real experience in the industry.
Sure.
And those who had been in the industry for 40 years and it was time that they retired. You've got a group of people in from their 30s to their mid-50s, which are the prime people working in the workforce. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those are going to be the ones who are going to be running the industry for the next 10 to 20 years.
Do you think, you know, we've been talking about skilled labor. We've been talking about wages and hiring. You know, when I came out of school, they said that there was a big gap in skilled labor between baby boomers retiring and getting the right. And I think they were talking about petroleum engineers, but do you think that still exists, or do you think the consolidation in energy has consolidated that delta?
Oh, there's always a shortage in the energy industry. It's, well, mm-hmm. Yes, there seems like there's always a shortage in the energy industry of skilled. But once again, it gets back to a very specific skill set. The energy industry is hiring now, but it's not hiring in droves. It's looking for people with very specific skill sets.
Sure.
If you have any experience having worked in the Permian Basin, you can write your own paycheck.
Sure.
But if you're just a very generalist, it's harder to find employment.
When I was leaving Texas Tech, Shell would pay for us to take oil and gas accounting.
Really?
They pay for the class. All right, folks. Thanks for joining us. Patrick Yankowski, Peggy Tuck, Chase Robertson, the Monday edition of Straight Talk Money. We'll be back tomorrow, same time. See you then. Have a great day.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.